Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On the heels of Double or Nothing, I am with two of my favorite people. As I've mentioned before, the Double J's, Jimmy and John. I'm George. I feel like I need to change my name to George with a J, just so we can be the Triple J's. But, you know, who cares what they do on Mondays? Because we are here on Wednesday, May 29th, on the heels of Double or Nothing. They are live from Los Angeles, California, which I'm upset because I'm not there. Because even if it's like 10 minutes away or 20 miles away, but I'm not there. But that's okay. Because I'd rather hang out with you guys than to be at the Kia Forum here talking about Dynamite. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm doing great. You can call us G-double-J or something John, like that. I don't know. I'm trying to make up some stuff. Anyway,
we'll figure it out. John, what do you think? How are you doing?
Any name you guys want to put on us is great with me. I'm doing great. I wore a special shirt in respect to Jimmy and the Great White North tonight and our shared love for the game of hockey as the Stanley Cup playoffs roll on. Things are well. And here I am as your podcast pinch hitter extraordinaire, once again, filling in. I'm like Julio Franco or whomever else you'd like to pinch hitter for the baseball folks out there. Happy to be here, guys.
Before we get into all things on how they followed up this Double or Nothing pay-per-view that happened this past Sunday, I do want to get in a little bit of news about the Wrestling Inc., what was reported by them earlier today. An AEW star, Darby Allin, quote, hopes to offend people with his directorial debut. He is a film student. I know it's kind of unthinkable for wrestling or wrestlers to have other interests outside of pro wrestling. But Darby Allin is a film guy, and he wants to kind of start putting together some films, and he wants to like offend people. That's his quote. What do you think, Jimmy? I think you just kind of have to let it speak for itself. I feel like if maybe you're trying to do too much, you're kind of building up this false expectation.
I don't understand it one bit. Why would you want to intentionally offend people? I mean, I get that people get offended by anything on the internet nowadays. All you have to do is tweet something and somebody's going to get offended. But to intentionally want to do that, it just baffles me. And especially someone who is a character who's a babyface, who's supposed to be a good guy. I know outside of wrestling now, the parameters, the fourth wall has been torn down and all that sort of thing. But as back in my day, as I used to say, the guys, you know, when you were in public, yes, you were cordial to fans, even though sometimes you were a big time heel. But at the same time, you didn't go out of your way to offend people, unless you were now with 2024 with the internet. Like I said, it's easy to do, but I just don't get the wanting to do it.
He said, and I want to quote him real quick before I get to your thoughts, John. He says, I want to offend people. F you, you're not effing with my art. I was in film school. We were making a movie and the teacher told me you cannot make movies like this. I said, I'm over 18. There should be no rules to what your body of art should be, especially in film school of all places. I told her I'm done. I dropped that. And that's when I started to be training to be a pro wrestler. There is a full circle story to that. Okay. Let me just start off saying he's not wrong in what he's saying. But it's also, I also think of like a comedian, right? I don't want to sidetrack too much, but like you think of a comedian that kind of complains on like, oh, back in my day, you know, there was no limitations and, you know, you can make all these racial jokes nowadays. I completely disagree. I think there's a time and a place for it today. I think it's just an excuse to maybe be a little racist in reality where it's like, you know, like you can still kind of make those jokes. You just got to be smart about it. You can't just be lazy about it. And this might be a case of maybe like Darby thinking too much. Oh, I want to make a movie just to offend people. Like, no, make your art and let everyone else decide on what it's going to be. What do you think, John? There you go.
Well, number one, I think Jimmy has become case study number one out there in the world for being a wonderful guy, a super nice guy, and just giving his opinion on the wonderful world of professional wrestling and people surely getting offended, right? So maybe you should have come out there and gave me a disclaimer, Jimmy, and said, I'm here to offend people, apparently, right? You know, in a way, I kind of respect it. In this era of everybody getting offended at everything, maybe he's getting out in front of it and saying, yeah, I want to make films and offend people. But I hear what you're saying, George, in terms of the stand-up comedian thing. It always reminds me, I'm from New York originally, Long Island, and got a lot of friends and family that are still from there. Obviously, my parents, number one. There's a trope that Long Islanders like to go back to, which begins with not for nothing. And I always laughed because after that, you know, you're not going to get a compliment, not for nothing, but I think you're, you know, whatever. So, you know, maybe it's a disclaimer getting ahead of, you know, letting him do whatever he feels his art needs to be. So I guess we'll have to see what happens when he drops his first film.
And who knows when that's going to be. And if it's close to what we saw previously in terms of, we would see a lot of cool videos that Darby did before some of his big matches on the pay-per-views and the Dynamites. And those were always really creative. So again, who knows what's going on in his mind. He is a creative person, but let's just see how it plays out throughout the year.
Maybe something just as simple as to get some traction. Could be just as simple as that, you know, like, hey, I'm intentionally going to offend people. And now people go, oh, I got to see what this is all about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There was nothing offensive about Adam Copeland's debut video, which apparently he had a decent hand in, right, in terms of scouting out locations in Seattle and helping film it and stuff like that. So he's obviously got an eye for the artistic side of things. But we'll see if he's trying to offend people. We'll see how this turns out.
Right.
Do you have access to my format? Because I was going to trying to find a way to segue into the Adam Copeland story.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Oh, well, no.
You're just that good. But speaking of which, Adam Copeland provided an injury update after his rather interesting bump, I guess you can say, at Double or Nothing. He posted up a video pretty much saying that, you know, the injury was his body's way of telling him to slow down and make better choices. Obviously, he performed that big dive from the top of the cage onto an elbow drop. But it looks like he broke his tibia and he's going to be out for a good 5 to 6 months. We're going to get into the TNT championship later when we talk about Dynamite. But Jimmy, you know him. Like, are you like surprised in any way that Adam Copeland is kind of making these risks at such later in his career?
Yes and no, because I know he likes to not only takes risks. It's not the risk part. It's the fact that he gets so emotionally invested in these matches that he wants to deliver for the fans out there. And he always wants to up the game. And in a match like this, where you've got a barbed wire steel cage match, he knows that the risks are elevated. And it seemed to me that he wanted to, like I said, maybe deliver too much, and he's smart enough to know not to have to do that sort of thing, or like coming off the top of the cage. I'm assuming that's where the fibula broke, is when he landed dropping that elbow, because it looked like guys who have been wrestling can tell me better than me being a referee. It almost looked like he double clutched before he went, almost like he rethought his strategy and said, oh, maybe this wasn't a good idea to begin with, because was the elbow the original thing he wanted to do, or did he want to splash? But he, you know, Malachi had that barbed wire strapped around him, so maybe a splash, you know, in hindsight he went, not a good idea, and wasn't prepared to take the landing like he would have normally. So maybe that had a play into it. But as far as whether he should slow down, I think everybody gets a point where they need to slow down and just be that guy that tells stories in the ring, and he's good enough to have to do that without having to do the over the top high risks, if that makes any kind of sense.
John, do you remember, it happened in 97, but it also happened in 89, when the Macho Man Randy Savage came off the top of the steel cage and landed on his feet for the double axe handle? Like, do you remember that at all when that happened?
I'm not sure if I remember the specific incidents that you're talking about, but I've seen that happen before, and it always looks a bit cringy. I understand what you're saying, land on your feet like that.
Like, how crazy are these mofos?
Super crazy. But the one thing, two things that I was thinking about that spot is, number one, I didn't think it was necessary. I understand You know, Jimmy talked about the elevated level of danger in a barbed wire steel cage match. It's already up here, right? And to, off to the top of the cage, it didn't really have too much on the to do with the finish, especially with the involvement of Gangrel coming up through the floor and things like that, leading to the spear to change things. But I understand how you can get caught up in the moment. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was thinking is, you know, when you're up there, okay, you're already up there, you're going to do the spot, right? The very last second before you make that leap, if your foot doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. if, you know, I don't know, there's no breeze in the arena, but if anything goes wrong, a bug flies by, it might spook mm-hmm. you a little bit and cause that double clutch, right? And I'm never going to make a direct connection between professional wrestlers at an advanced age and someone like me who still tools around playing hockey in the beer league at 44. But very recently, Jimmy, you know this very well, I was after a scoring chance skating into the corner, my right edge caught in a rut. I was going to casually stop to the right. No one was around me. The boards are at the dangerous distance away, but I couldn't turn to the right. So I quick audible, tried to turn to the left, and my skate was still caught and I ate it. And I went flying right into my shoulder. So things happen. And, you know, as good, you know, as seasoned as you are at whatever your craft may be, things always happen. So there, I don't think there's any blame to be placed or anything like that. I feel bad that he's hurt. Obviously, he's been having so much fun. And it throws a wrench into the plans, as I know we're going to talk about. I don't know if I just jumped your segue again, George, but if I did, man.
How do you know? I specifically did not email you my format just so I can, you know, we can just go with the flow.
But you apparently, gotta be good at something, right?
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, speaking of which, it does look like Dynamite. It was reported by Brian Alvarez and Tony Khan confirmed it earlier today on the Rich Eisen show that his injury kind of changed up plans for Dynamite. John, I do want to ask you first, do you like hearing these things? Because personally, I don't care. Just give me the show. I don't want to know if there's rewrites. What do you think?
I mean, this is the first we've really heard about that in the AEW world, right? We heard about it for a long time in WWE and was always placed on Vince McMahon. And I think after you hear about it over and over and over again, if you're not really super thrilled with the product as a fan, it might become something that annoys you. But again, just like jumping from the top of the cage or going to the corner on the ice, things happen sometimes and you've got to rewrite your show. I find it interesting that this report just came out right before some specificity was added to it in terms of the rewrite for tonight's show based on Adam Copeland's level of involvement as initially planned, right? So it doesn't really bother me. If it becomes a constant thing, it won't just bother me. I'm sure it'll bother the wrestlers. We've heard, and Jimmy would know better than anybody, about people being upset about that sort of thing when it happens over and over. You know what to expect coming into a show, and then it gets rewritten right before you go out there. But again, I think this seems right now like a one-off, although there were some things tonight that definitely led me to think that maybe, you know, this was heavily rewritten.
I do want to know your thoughts when we get into that, but I think I was watching the Rise and Fall of WCW or one of those things on Confidential one time, and they were talking about WCW, and they were kind of saying in a negative way, like, oh, toward the end of WCW, it was so nuts. There was all these rewrites and scripts were finalized even when the show started, and they made it seem like it's the worst thing in the world. Is that just a part of live TV, Jimmy, just kind of being able to adjust accordingly in real time? Because again, this is live TV. Like, things can go wrong, things can get adjusted. Is that just something that comes with, you know, producing a weekly, multiple times a week live TV for pro wrestling?
It is something, especially when you're doing 52 weeks a year of live television, which is difficult to do. Every other television show out there has what, a 24 episode season, if that, nowadays. So,
and they ain't live, so they can they can reshoot cut, as much as they want. Yeah.
Cut, reset, you know, the whole bit. And doing 52, I've been a part of shows where something was expected to go a certain way, and then all of a sudden it was a last minute, whether it was at times an injury causes you to call an audible and go in a different direction, and sometimes the boss just said at the last minute, no, I don't like this, we're not doing that, we're going in a different direction, there you go. And now it's up to the talent to help tell that story that they want told at the last minute without getting a chance to really think about it and, you know, get into character and say, this is the way I want to present it, this is the way I think I should present it. So it does cause a little bit of a problem. And maybe tonight with that last minute hiccup, at least that's what they were said. Maybe that caused a little bit of a dissension, or not dissension, but threw a little bit of a curveball at people and kind of threw them off their game if that makes any kind of sense. And also, I agree with you guys that I don't like telling everybody before you go into the show, we had to rewrite the show. There were a lot of times with WWE, they said it after the fact that, you know, on Tuesday after a Raw, they would say, well, you know, last night's show was the last, the final segment or whatever it was the last minute rewrite or something like that. So keep it under your hat, keep something under your hat, you know?
And even if a show gets rewritten, I mean, if it still comes across as fun, I think I just saw, and I apologize, I'm not sure who it was, but I think I just saw somebody in the chat say, I'm not sure, you know, I don't care as long as it's fun. You know, if you have a good time, if you can just compartmentalize, I mean, I know this is episodic television, right? But if you go to a local wrestling show or a house show on one of the local loops, you might not have any idea what's going to happen at that show. And there's a thousand times over that it's been a ton of fun. It's unfortunate, though, that, you know, this stuff gets out. And I think that leads to the frustration.
Mm-hmm. I do want to ask one more quick thing before we get into Dynamite. Another news story kind of mentioned was mentioned today in off the heels of the Double or Nothing post show media scrum. And I'll keep it short. Maybe a thumbs up or thumbs down, a yay or nay. Tony Khan teases an AEW mixed tag team division. Yay or nay? Do you guys want to see it? Up or thumb the Vince McMahon promo? Oh, Jeff Jarrett, thumbs up. Jeff Jarrett, thumbs down. What do you guys think? Mixed tag match, thumbs up, or mixed tag?
Let's see it.
Cop out.
It's kind of weird, and not to get too lengthy into this thing. All depends on how it's presented. If it's done right, I'm okay with it. If it just feels like it's something just to be different, no, thank you.
I mean, I see both sides of it. Mm-hmm. If there's there's TV time or air time for folks that aren't getting utilized, great. But otherwise, now you're going to add another title into the mix that we don't necessarily need. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening. I do want to give a shout out before we're going to send Dynamite that everybody watching us here on the Wrestling Inc. YouTube channel, I don't think people realize just how live we are. Like, literally, it's like 7:31 right now on my time, which means it's 10:30 on the East Coast, which means it's 2:30 a.m. somewhere maybe in Europe. It might be 7:30 a.m. somewhere, like wherever, you know, 12 hours from now is, like, you know, somewhere in Africa, Russia, wherever it is. I just like the fact that people are watching us live literally all over the globe. I guess you can say internationally. That's amazing. I'm going to get into that. I'm going to get into the word international when we close the show. I'm just going to give you guys a heads up. But Dynamite tonight from the Kia Forum. Fun fact, I was at the first AEW Dynamite from the Kia Forum a little under 2 years ago. That little infamous MJF promo. June 1st, 2002. So lots happened in the last 2 years. But the show starts with how Dynamite should have started about a month ago with the brand new champion coming out. But this Dynamite started with Mercedes Moné and her in-ring celebration with being the new TBS champion. Good promo, I think. Jimmy, I want to get your thoughts first. You know, kind of comes out. A little backhanded compliment toward Willow, a little here and there. You have Sky Blue come out, admit that she was the one that attacked Mercedes. I want to get your thoughts first, just because, you know, it's been a lot of criticism online, and not just online, but here as well, when it comes to Mercedes Moné's mic skills. Mm-hmm. How do you think she did in her first promo as champion?
It was okay. It just still feels like it's not organic. It still doesn't feel like it's her. It's like she's playing wrestler, pretending to be wrestler, not... Just be yourself. And if you're, I'm confused now whether she's supposed to be a heel or a babyface. Mm-hmm. I mean, that too much tweener thing that's going on right now, just pick a side and stick to it. And if you're going to be a heel, piss people off. Mm-hmm. Please do it. And if you're going to be a babyface, do it in a way that they gravitate towards you organically, like Willow did, which, you know, and as far as her getting into a match tonight, like we saw, she delivered on Sunday at Sunday's pay-per-view. So, you know, that time off, you know, I was kind of worried that, you know, you have to get back into that groove. She seemed like she didn't skip a beat. So that was good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I was big on Sky Blue being the person revealed as the person who attacked in the dark, because if it was, you blew off the angle tonight. We'll get to that later. But anyway.
She comes out. I feel like the crowd was a little hit or miss, not knowing where to cheer or boo. There were some things that they cheered. There were some things that they booed. Clearly shows that Willow is the bigger baby face. I want to ask you something specific, John, just kind of coming out of this segment. Who is Sky Blue always winking to?
Well, I think it's me. Okay. Honestly, most likely. probably just wants to be friends with me, you know, and that's fine. She seems like she's a nice person. I totally agree with you, Jimmy. You know, she's right in between everything. You know, the dance that she does, the song that she has, the chant that it invokes, very, very baby face, right? And then she gives praise towards Willow, very baby face, but then jumps to the other side of the fence talking about, but you're just too nice. The people are confused. And I think that was something that we saw a few times tonight. Not really sure who to root for, who to boo. That's a thing. I thought, you know, the Sky Blue thing was a little clunky. The reveal was almost, oh, hey, remember what I did here? And we had no clues, no really mention of that once or twice here in between then and now. And then all of a sudden it was there she is behind her and attacking and gets a title shot. And by the way, there was also something there that I don't like in any wrestling whatsoever, just a pet peeve of mine, when a non-title holder touches the title and holds it up. Again, maybe I'm going back to the hockey stuff too much, Jimmy, right? Don't touch the cup.
Cup, no.
That's
by the way, not to cut you off, John, but you know why the Stanley Cup, the Hockey Hall of Fame, is in Toronto?
You don't recall exactly why.
It's because the Leaf, that's the only way the Leafs can see the Stanley Cup. But anyway.
Well, you're allowed to say that, especially as a Leafs fan. I was going to ask you if you jump ship once they're out, or not jump ship, but turn your allegiance to Canada, and are you rooting for Edmonton? And I'm sorry to derail everything, but I meant to ask that earlier.
No, you know, as far as that goes, I'm hoping they do it only in the name of Wayne Gretzky and, you know, Mess and all those guys. But am I a fan of them? No, they're still the enemy.
Yeah.
I want to do a little compare and contrasting really fast, because you have Mercedes come out and say, I'm the greatest women's wrestler of all time. I'm the CEO. I'm the boss. I'm the best. I'm this. I'm that. And that's fine. That's kind of a little heelish in my way, but she still kind of comes off as a fake baby face. What's the difference between her and, let's say, when Becky Lynch was calling herself the man every single week? And she was obviously the biggest baby face on the women's division back in the day, like 2-3 years ago.
From my opinion, I think it's the way it was said. Mm-hmm. When Mercedes says it, it's like, I'm the best wrestler in the world. And when Becky said it, it was with conviction. It was with like she was making a statement. She wasn't just saying it all pompous and that sort of thing. So that was the big difference for me, at least anyways.
And she's also saying it in a place where she's built that equity over time. And all due respect to Mercedes, she's only been here in this organization for a certain amount of time. She was obviously out with an injury for a long time in New Japan and everything else. She's obviously reinvented herself, new character a little bit, right? That too. We're not fully invested in that just yet. So you can't just make that claim. We haven't seen it in a while. You got to prove it, right? But it's also in the delivery. Becky Lynch, as an example, says that with conviction. Mm-hmm. And I almost called her Sasha. Mercedes' exclamation is almost a little flippant, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, good points. Obviously, some of the chat agrees with you. We see the Bucks and Jack Perry arrive in style. Then we see Swerve versus Killswitch in a, I guess you can call it an AEW Eliminator Championship World Championship title, number one contender match, whatever they want to call it. I'm gonna say something and present something, but it's gonna be after the John Moxley match. So I want to hear your guys' thoughts first, and I want to kind of go over a couple things. But John, you know, Swerve, we saw him in the, I guess you can say, second segment of the show. Not the first match, not the main event. He's the world champion. Aside from that, what did you think of the match?
I thought the match was fine. I had a hard time getting past the Mercedes segment being before it, because they're giving her the flowers after winning a title coming off the last pay-per-view, whereas they didn't do that with Swerve, and that was something that stuck out like a sore thumb with us. And then they roll him right out after in a match that I have some things to mention. But, you know, just to make sure that I'm being positive here at some point, right before this,
You don't have to be, by the way.
I really liked the Double or Nothing montage. I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. But the match was fine as far as, you know, the competitiveness goes. Mm-hmm. But it really shouldn't have been that competitive is point number one. Once again, right? We've seen Swerve with that title already go, I don't know how long, with Kyle Fletcher, and now this time with Killswitch. It was also listed as a House of Dragon, whose house match, which I don't know what that is or what the stakes. Oh, I know what the stakes are, because it's the Eliminator match, but is it that match or is it this kind of match? What are the rules? I don't know. Didn't seem to be different to me at all. If it was some sort of dragon match, I would think that a dinosaur would have a little bit of an edge. So maybe that explains why it was as competitive as it was. But I also believe, like, didn't Killswitch kick out of a finisher?
Yeah.
I don't get that. It confuses people. And that's what we were talking about before. We don't know how much to get behind Swerve. And that's unfortunate because, you know, he's fantastic.
You're reading my notes now, John. Yeah. But for me, like you said, I did like the match. I thought the match was fine. I did have a problem with him kicking out of the finish because now as your world champion and you're wrestling on TV every week, that finish needs to be established as something that is dangerous and does not get kicked out of, so that when it does happen at a big moment on a pay-per-view, that's when people bite and go, oh, I thought, you know, that's when it means something. And this match should have happened last week on the go-home show going in, not against Nick Wayne. You know, and it's nothing against Nick Wayne, but he just didn't fit in that spot. And I know people are going to defend it by saying, but they have a history. Yeah, but you have a history with a lot of guys if you go far enough back. That's not the point. The point here, at least Killswitch presents a more of a threat going into the pay-per-view. And this idea of having an eliminator championship match so that you have to beat the champion to get a shot at the champion. So in essence, you have to beat him twice to win the championship means is ridiculous to me. I don't understand that one at all. Yes, I don't like non-title matches as well, but at least you don't have to beat the champion to get a shot at the champion. There's other ways to do it. And again, why after it's mind-boggling to me that this, the guy that should be the man that they strapped the rocket to, the man, you know, I like Swerve. I think he's the guy who can carry this championship well. But the problem is the championship doesn't make a man. The man makes a championship, but he also has to be put in a position to do that. And they haven't done that yet.
I do want to add on a little sprinkle to what you guys said. In terms of kicking out of the finish, I don't mind it happening. But in this case scenario, you know, nothing is going to happen with Killswitch. Like, it's one thing if, like, oh my God, a Killswitch kicked out of the finisher, and then he gets built up and built up throughout the weeks, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? I feel like I'm going to say that a lot.
Well, George, the other thing, too, real quick, if you don't mind, I'm sorry. There was something else added to it after the fact, right? Like, Swerve getting his revenge in terms of having his dread pulled out.
Look at that. Look at that. Swerve cuts his part of his hair as payback.
Well, were my eyes playing tricks on me, or did that look very much like fake hair off of the mat? I'm sorry. I had to point that out. I don't know.
No, sports entertainment hair.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. I could use some of that in the back here.
drop my format, and I can't pick it up right now. So I'm going to have to read it from the room or frame it from the floor. I do want to, just because it was kind of the next match, we had Jon Moxley in another eliminator match of some sort after he just had one against Rocky Romero. Rocky got a lot of offense on this one, and this I did want to kind of put this together because we all saw the match. It was great. You know, No one's ever going to question the validity of how great these matches are. So my question, what I wanted to present to you, and this can be put together with a Swerve match, is how often were these guys wrestling before they were champions? It's not a rhetorical question. Like, you know, how often? Like pretty, like every week, every other week, right? They were wrestling a lot is my point, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So yeah. Now that they're champions, and I'm not saying, I get the fighting champion, but what's changed? Like, what has changed after becoming champion? Absolutely nothing. Yeah. And there's something not right with that. There's something not right with they become literally the top prize. Let's get rid of the WWE for a second. They literally become two of the biggest champions in the entire wrestling world. Yet they're still wrestling these meaningless matches on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's the case, and give the championship to someone else, if they're just going to stay the same exact person every single week. And I see that with Swerve and Jon Moxley.
That's why I didn't know what to pick in terms of our predictions on Wrestling Inc. going into Double or Nothing with Moxley and Takeshita. I thought, what was the point of having this match if maybe there's not going to be some shenanigans go on and Takeshita wins? You know, so that now he's got this, you know, title shot down the road because he won an eliminator match, right? That didn't happen. I ended up switching my pick at the very end. creeping up in the standings, by the way, for the year. But yeah, it drives me nuts too. I don't understand the concept. And the way you just described that, George, made me think of like back in the day, and we don't want to just be like WWF, WWE, mm-hmm. but you know, I can recall, I'm just making something up here, but a situation like a Bret Hart as world champion having a match on, let's say, Superstars with Iron Mike Sharp, right? Which turns out to be a really engaging matchup, right? You know who's going to win. But there's something different about it. There's a mystique that's not there, right? The stakes are different. It's a fighting champion type of thing. It's the non-title match, which we may or may not like, right, Jimmy? But it's still, you know, the champ is being active. He's not just resting on his laurels. Maybe he's warming up for his next shot. But I don't know. There's something that's missing in this eliminator thing. And also, I think WWE used to do it as well. I think they called it something different, right? Championship contenders match or something like that to fight the champion. But I don't like it either.
Listen, no. I'm not saying you got to have one championship match every 6 months like Roman Reigns, right? I feel like that's exception to the rule, or even like 3 months. But to like literally have a match like every single week, Jimmy, like, I don't know. Like, I think of the Austin, like, you know, the Attitude Era, and where like Austin was literally on every single week. He was always involved in something. And if he wasn't wrestling some kind of tag match, and I think that's maybe, is that like the way to hide it? To have like a bunch of tag matches and really like showcase a champion like that. That way, they still remain fresh in people's minds.
That's one avenue you can take, but at the same time, you can have your champion come on TV and show himself in many different ways. Stone Cold used to come out, chug a beer, stun somebody that the people despise. He got over, chugged a few more Steve Weisers, and you know that was it. He got over that way. He didn't have to have a match per se. And putting him in tag matches, the odd tag match helped as well. And to your point, John, having, you know, Bret Hart, he didn't do it every week. Yes, he had some good matches with some upper level enhancement talent, for lack of a better term, because an Iron Mike Sharp was a guy who could go and he could put the boots to someone like a Bret Hart and make it believable. And people go, oh, he's giving the champ a run for his money, and the champ overcomes and that sort of stuff. But yeah, it just feels wrong putting him in meaningless matches because there's no rhyme or reason to have him face so-and-so. You know, I, with all due respect to Rocky Romero, I think the last match he won was in 2021. So what earned him an opportunity to wrestle for not only the championship, to wrestle for an opportunity to wrestle for the championship? I thought we had a ranking system. Whatever happened to that thing?
It was there, and then it was gone, and then it was back, and now it's gone again, apparently.
Yeah, but again, not to make it, again, we're not saying you have to be like the WWE, be an alternative, be something different, but have it make sense. Give it some reasons for it to happen, as opposed to, oh, this is a cool matchup, let's put it together.
It's almost as if, good.
Oh, sorry, George. You got to have some foresight. Like, don't let people like us come on right after and go, why did they do that?
It just kind of seems a little bit every now and then where it seems like, you know what, on the other show, the champion never wrestles, but on our show, the champ is always going to wrestle because that's where the best wrestle. Like, I'm not saying don't, you know, I guess WWE is there. We're bringing them back into the equation now. But, you know, I get WWE is there, but they do some things right. You know, you don't got to do a lot of things what they do, but there's a couple things that they do right. Right. And it's a lot of that is that mystique of maybe a champion of the aura and whatnot. And yeah, there's something about their champions and even how Moxie was presented. It's like these guys are on every single week. I thought it would have been even the same or if not even more impactful if Swerve didn't have a match and he only came out at the end of the show like we saw ended up happening.
No, what I would have liked to see happen is if you're going to have him come out and make his promo or whatever he says, he puts over the gauntlet match as something big, something that's really important. I am here to look and see for myself with my own eyes who's going to be next on my list. So whoever that is, I'm here, I'm watching, and I'm waiting for you.
Yeah, I mean, I knew he had a little backstage promo before then, but even like maybe coming out before that match started and saying, hey, I'm out here, I'm still champion, gives the crowd a reason to do the dance, and then just says, you know, I'll be watching ringside, and I'm, you know, just kind of keeping an eye on things. Yeah, just there's many ways to do these things, you know, making sure Swerve got his TV time. Speaking of TV time, and we're going to have fun here. I need everybody to do their best Chris Jericho impression when saying, the learning tree.
I'm not even going to attempt it.
Oh, why would I do it when I can have him do it? You know?
Oh, the learning tree.
The learning tree.
Look, I've got his buddy too. It's a former incarnation, but here they are again. This is becoming my new thing, I guess. Huh? Oh yeah, I should position him like that, I guess.
There you go.
Speaking of which, it looks like you already got the action figure. So my question for you, John, is will you be getting the learning tree t-shirt from shopaew.com?
I will absolutely not. No, that's not for me. No, thank you. I was once an educator myself, and I don't believe in this format.
what do you think about this, John? You know, we've talked about this on Dynamite before, and I've said a couple times that you know, you don't always have to have Jericho always featured on every single show and every single pay-per-view. Are you in the green set? Are you a still a Jericho-holic at heart and you want to see him every single week?
No. I mean, I have a ton of respect for him. I've been a fan over the course of his career, but of late, and I know he always gets credit for reinventing himself, and mm-hmm. he should time and time again. He understands that better than anybody, but especially for a company that has so many people under contract and not a lot of people getting showcased. I've not been a fan of what's been happening lately. I will say that, you know, he did make he went a little meta tonight and made a comment about who doesn't want more TV time.
Yeah.
Well, I do, which I thought was kind of cool. It's kind of witty, but the whole segment to me, and I know it's supposed to be cheesy on purpose, but I just thought it was bad. I just thought it was barfy. If I can make up a word there. I did like where it went. And if this was the plan the whole time with Joe and Hook coming out together, not together, but one after the other, and we see what we did there. We tied something back to something we weren't sure why it happened all those weeks or months ago. So that was cool. So if the end result is good, then all's well that ends well. But this thing isn't for me, at least not so far.
I'll at least give it a chance because I get where it's going. You know, there's that they're feeding into the internet again is what they tend to do too much. But that's where this whole idea of, Chris Jericho's demanding television time every week and he's taking time away from young talent that can use it and benefit from it more than he can. But him feeding into this is at times entertaining, but a lot of times it is. You know, I kind of like the idea of having that hokey little learning tree in the background. It looked like something that in a grade two class that they put up in the back of the classroom or something like that. But other than that, it was okay. Let's put it that way. But I agree with you, John. I like where it went afterwards. And I like the fact that Joe looks like he's going to take over and mentor Hook. Because if you're going to have someone who's supposed to be a tough guy that can take punishment, nobody better than Samoa Joe to teach you that.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And in a super efficient way, too. They didn't really take too much time with that interaction. Mm-hmm. Just a couple words whispered, and then off we go, right? And that was, you talk about telling stories. You told a story with, 30 seconds of time, and everybody understood what happened there. And it leads you, what do we always want? We want to be left with wanting more and understanding what's going to happen next in this situation. Exactly. That's what they did there, and I thought it was masterful as far as that part goes.
I do want to give Jericho just a little bit of credit because it always does feel like he wants to put over at least some talent, right? We saw with the inner circle with Sammy and you know, eventually with the JAS putting over 2.0 that obviously is an extremely underrated team. But now we're seeing Brian Keith thrown into the mix where obviously he's got a lot of you know, he's been around for a while, the bounty hunter. I guess he's calling the fans or his followers the branches, the learning tea branches, which I think is kind of clever. But at least we're seeing like a new face here and there. Enzo or Big Cass, said Enzo. With Big Cass, you know, we've seen him around. He's been around for probably close to a little over a decade. But at least Brian Keith is a new face that we're going to see probably on a regular basis now.
Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, what happened to the other regular faces that were with Chris Jericho in the past?
That's what I was going to say.
Does anybody even remember the name of the group? I guess the
effort is there.
I get that. But now you have to take advantage of it. That's the key.
It's the effort. And I like to see that continue to roll out. And I know what they're trying to do. But yeah, if you look back at, you know, what's the greatest predictor of future behavior is the past, right? I wish we had some foresight to say, as long as this is going to a positive place. And I think we might have that with Joe and Hook potentially, which is the positive that we all saw out of that segment. But as far as Brian Keith goes, you know, you talk about getting the rub. We'll see where it goes.
Talk about seeing where it goes. My favorite segment of the show happened after this. We saw a video package on Stephanie Vacare, who is a big time CMLL superstar. She is a CMLL women's champion along with the New Japan's or NJPW Women's Strong Champion, which is a championship that's almost a Sasha Mercedes has never held. We're going to get into that in a second. But this is what I want. A nice good old fashioned video package, because I have no idea who Stephanie Vacare is, but now I do. Like, are they finally kind of listening to us? What do you think, Jimmy?
I hope somebody's listening to someone, because I agree. I wasn't aware of her before I saw this video package. And when I saw the video package, this is someone I could probably get invested to and want to see have a good match. But again, like everything else, it's rushed. Everything is rushed because we just got this video package. Wait a week or two with another video package or so to really enforce and introduce her to the audience and get people going, look, I've seen this video of her a couple of weeks in a row now. This looks like somebody I could really get invested in. And then when you debut her or you bring her out in front of your audience, now she gets that reaction you're hoping for her to get. And tonight when she came out, it felt like, yeah, okay, we just saw it, but we're still not, you know, on board yet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm one of the people that needed the video package like you, George, to understand who I'm dealing with here. Now, I'm told from some wrestling and colleagues that this match is absolutely going to slap when and if it happens between Vacare and Mercedes. But you roll out that video package, which is great, fantastic. Again, hopefully we're learning here, we're progressing. But later on in the show, spoiler alert, sorry, I know I probably shouldn't do this. It becomes, instead of a couple weeks down the line, like, wow, there she is, cool. It becomes, for at least it did for me, oh, wait, who's that? Oh, that's the girl from the video earlier, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, that it lessens that reaction, you know?
Yeah, I do kind of see where you guys are coming from. All I know is that this kind of goes, this to me is a lot better than, and coming up next week on Rampage, it's going to be so-and-so versus so-and-so, and you know, on Twitter, as you start on Twitter, you're going to see the CMLL champion on facing Kenny Omega, and then the next match is like, no, like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever they did now is way better than what they used to do, you know, especially when they announced like El Hijo del Vikingo versus Kenny Omega and just like a random like Rampage match or something. So at least they're making some kind of progress. We saw the Don Callis family come out, or I guess Don Callis have a segment in regards to his family. I don't think anybody bought that Orange Cassidy was going to join the Don Callis family, but I didn't really see what was coming next. I want to know what you're reacting to, Jimmy.
No, it's just the way it was presented, and it's surprising with someone like Don Callis in the ring, because he's got such a great mind and as for delivery and how to let it play out. It's like everything happened again too fast. Don Callis, let him finish what he was saying before Orange Cassidy's music hit. Let him call him out. And then Orange Cassidy comes out. He grabs the contract, and before Don Callis could finish a sentence, he's already ripping it up. Mm-hmm. Tease it a little bit. Let him look at it. Let him read it. He's going, maybe he's nodding his head a little bit. He's going, he's looking at it. He's going, smiling at Don Callis. Then you tear it up. It's like, it was like 10 seconds after he entered the ring. He just took the contract, lifted it up and went, you know, there was no drama. There was no, you know, sucking in the audience, so to speak. And And the aftermath, I'll let you get to the aftermath and explain that before I start going off on that. It didn't come off the way I, again, this is my preference. Mm-hmm. Others may have liked it, enjoyed it. I just would have liked a little more drama.
That's all we want.
Or thinking it through, right, ahead of time. It's almost like telling a story. We've talked about a million times. Like, you don't write a story without the end in mind. And this is a small segment. And to me, I had a little bit of a suspension of disbelief type of disconnect in that here's the contract. We're all primed up. Orange Cassidy. Cool. Orange comes out quickly. By the way, I'm glad that he has his Pixies music back. Love it. Comes out, tears up the contract. Never really looked at it. Is his name on it? I don't know. Was it, you know, because that would have been a tell. This is the way my brain thinks in circles. But then, you know, Statlander and Stokely come out. We see what happens in the end there. And it makes me think, like, am I supposed to believe that this whole convoluted situation that happened in the span of like 7 minutes was what was intended the whole time? I mean, I know it's a show, but it didn't really make all the most sense in the world to me.
Yeah, are they implying that Statlander is going to join the family? Is she doing her own thing with Stokely? A lot of weird unanswered questions. It's always good to have unanswered question because it makes you look something to forward to maybe next week. But this just kind of came across as a little like I don't know what's going on, but like I feel like they're not going to really explain it in a way that kind of makes sense. I'm digging the Statlander heel turn, and I want to talk a little bit about their promo, her and Stokely, because I thought this delivered, to be honest with you. Their promo. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's an advancement of her character, right? And you had to follow up on that from the pay per view, based on the physical act of her heel turn. So good on them for doing that there. I'd like to see more out of Chris Statlander on the microphone as well. I think she's incredibly talented in the ring. I've been a big fan of hers for a long time, and I think she can really go places. So to flesh out that character, heel turn much needed, and let's see what she can do with it for sure. Stokely on her side doesn't hurt at all either.
He's just a natural born hater, and I like that he admits it. Like a lot of people are trying to sit there and try to be the hero in their own story, but with Stokely, just know, like, I'm a hater. There's really not much else to do. What do you think, Jimmy?
No, I like it. I like where it's going. I just don't think they needed her twice out there today. Like we had the one out in front of the audience and later on in the backstage segment too. And if you're going to do that again, save the interaction with Don Callis and Orange, because it there was a bit of a disconnect there. So when they had their promo segment later on, am I fast forwarding too much in the back? Have them come out and do it in front of the audience where you can feel that natural reaction and feel the heat that she's getting.
Especially with somebody that's becoming so beloved like Willow. Like, you want to feed off the positive energy that they're giving Willow, even when she's not there. And that kind of goes to show, like, just how over Willow can be. And then you can have an even bigger heel and Chris Statlander kind of counteracting that kind of energy that they're giving off.
Right.
Daniel Garcia and Matt Menard had a nice little promo. You had Daniel Garcia saying he's going to work the rankings to challenge for the international championship. I don't get it, because if you want to work your way up the rankings, why don't you work your way up to the AEW World Championship, not the international? But whatever.
I mean, maybe you just ask politely for an eliminator match.
I don't know. We saw the culmination of this Mercedes and Sky Blue a whole hour, I guess you can say, after it was revealed that Sky Blue was the attacker from Mercedes Moné, come out in a match. And I personally think Mercedes has not lost a step, and much love to Sky Blue, but it kind of shows just how good Mercedes is and how relatively new Sky Blue is. But am I overthinking it? Did I just kind of, am I just trying to oversell Mercedes on how good she is?
I don't think so. I think that she's probably got a lot to, she feels like she probably has a lot to prove to a lot of people right now. Again, making the giant leap from the machine that she was in for so long, right? And becoming a new character, being out with injury, especially. And she's had to have some nerves, especially going into the pay-per-view over the weekend. I thought the match was fine. I don't really understand either why Sky Blue got a title shot, but I guess as a reward for it, that attack backstage, I'm not sure. It is what it is. I did note that I was a little bit frightened by one spot in the match where Mercedes hit the Meteora to the outside. I thought she overshot it. I thought she was going right over the top, but she turned out okay, which is great. And then something that I thought was cool, I don't know if you guys noticed, but in a way, Sky Blue's finisher and Mercedes' new finisher are almost mirror images of each other.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Kind of cool.
Good eye. Good car.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. What did you think, Jimmy?
No, I thought the match was fine. Outside of the fact that I needed reasons more than just, you know, she was the attacker in the dark. And okay, so are you getting a match tonight? You know, I just heard from Tony Khan, or he texted me just now, or whatever the case may be, with Tony Schiavone, I guess, is his messenger, which is sad because Tony is such a good guy and such a great commentator. I think he deserves a better role than being Tony Khan's voice on TV. But again, the match itself was fine. Mercedes is looking like she hasn't lost a beat, which is hard to do, especially after so much ring time that you're not getting. Because you got to get back in that groove. You got to get those bumps and those reps in. It's one thing to train in a ring in a warehouse or in a performance center or something like that. But to train in front of an audience and actually have a match is a completely different thing. And she's doing really good. And I just don't like the fact that they had something going with this Sky Blue being the attacker in the dark. Let it play out. They just blew the reveal and the angle off in one night.
It's not at this point going to go down as one of the greatest rivalries of all time. It's going to need some more legs to it as far as that goes. You know what else? Just a little funny side piece. I caught some Bam Bam Bigelow vibes in Mercedes' hair of late with the orange and the yellows. I don't know. I'm sure that has nothing to do with anything, but it's just kind of cool. Bam Bam, nice. Big favorite of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Good. I'm a big Bam Bam Bigelow fan. I thought he is one of the best working men. Like, it's something so small. Now we're talking Bam Bam now. Something so small that, like, when he did a cartwheel, it was, like, phenomenal to the point where when I would play the Nintendo WrestleMania, like, it was my favorite character to beat just because you can do that that cartwheel in the video game. It was great. It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, at least you didn't have the agility of a Shockmaster. So,
younger folks listening and watching, go check out some Bam Bam Bigelow stuff if you haven't before. It's a treat.
And Jimmy, put some respect on Tugboat's name.
Oh, that's right.
By the way,
sorry, Uncle Fred.
So sorry. just a quick sidetrack. And I swear to God, this is gonna be 30 seconds.
My fault.
Just because I mentioned Tugboat, I always thought that Typhoon Earthquake should have joined forces with the Texas Tornado, and they could have been the ultimate natural disasters.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I got a quick Tugboat story. The first time in Calgary.
Go ahead.
First time in Calgary, you know, we're in the locker room, and, you know, Stu Hart's was always there at all the shows. Wonderful jet man. Just, you know, trained everybody hard like he always did. But he also loved to test big guys, and everybody knew it. So, you know, everybody said, hey Fred, did you meet Stu? Go up and introduce yourself. He likes big guys. And Fred didn't know. So he said, hello, Mr. Hart. My name is Fred Ottman. I'm a pleasure to meet you, sir. He says, you're a big fella there. Has anybody ever done this to you? And he grabs his thumb and he does this twist thing that I've never seen before. And in 2 seconds, Fred Ottman's on his knees. He's going, my God, yes, that hurts. I get it. You know, but everybody knew. That's why he sent him over there. It was like, I don't know. Stu just had to show big guys that it's so easy to get them on their knees for some reason.
Special kind of love, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can never get enough of dungeon stories. So that's for another podcast, though. Okay. But going back to the Mercedes match with the Bam Bam vibes, we saw, as you mentioned, Stephanie Vaquer come out. And this kind of, obviously, with Forbidden Door coming up, there's a lot of chatter of these two coming in, fresh off the heels of the big AEW, TNA and NXT Women's Championship going at it. We're probably going to see the TBS champion and the NJPW Women's Strong. I what I want to see, though, because I feel like there was subtly, and I like these subtle mentions in terms of she has the championship that Mercedes should have won about a year ago. So I feel like there can be a story if they do it right. Obviously, there can be a story in terms of I have the championship that should have been yours, and I hope that they build off of that leading into the Forbidden Door. So we'll see if that ends up happening. I think
because at least that's a story, right? That's my only concern about Forbidden Door and Forbidden Door type events is It's great to put these matches together, but what's the story behind it? And without that, if they don't go there, it's just another one of those so-called dream matches, right? And we abandon all storylines and we abandon all hope for ye who enter, and we come back after the fact, jumping back up. So there's a way to do it, and I really hope they go that route.
The only thing that worries me about pay-per-views like that is you put every other story on hold.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, and that's the hard thing. Sometimes, okay, everything's on hold. We're having these dream matches, these once in a lifetime matches, never before seen matches. These guys are facing each other for the first time. And then all of a sudden, all right, we're back to regularly scheduled program.
Yep.
Speaking of stories, we saw the Elite come out, as I mentioned, in style. We had Bucks, Okada, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry come out. Okada gets gifted a Lambo. When was the last time you got lifted a Lambo?
Never, but I thought he drove one the other week arriving to the building. Or was that a
Lambo? No shame in having one more.
Oh, okay.
and a lot happened in this segment, by the way. Adam Copeland officially gets stripped, as we didn't know it was going to happen anyways. I you know, it looked like Jack Perry was going to become the new TNT champion. Now, the new interim EVP, Chris Daniels, who apparently has no authority because he just gets all his messages from Tony Khan, and then he delivers the message, comes out, says there's going to be a bunch of qualifying matches to determine who's going to be in the match at Forbidden Door and a ladder match for the AEW TNT Championship. And then the Acclaim come out, or with Daddy Ass, and that's kind of how it ends. But a lot happened. Whether it's good or bad, I'll see what you guys say first for me to determine my opinion. But Jimmy, I do want to get your thoughts first. Yeah, like I said, a lot happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, my favorite part of the segment is Okada calling, the LA crowd a certain bad word. I mean,
the B word. Yeah, it was kind of funny, but that was like third or fourth time we heard it that night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know, leave it for Okada then. And then it makes it feel like, mm-hmm. That's real special, you know, the B word. And, you know, Jack Perry, at least appear like your legs are sore from being on fire.
He was on fire. And it's like, you would never know about it.
You know, was he wearing fire retardant pants? I have no idea what the heck was going on there, but at least put it over a little bit. You know,
it was a flamethrower. It wasn't just fire. It was a freaking flamethrower.
And I know people are going, well, years ago, they set so-and-so on fire and so-and-so. Yeah, but you know what? They didn't come back and pin somebody to win the match afterwards. You know what I mean? The Orange Cassidy School of Selling. Sorry, I had to go there. But, a lot to digest. And I like the – I didn't mind Christopher the new EVP or interim
EVP. Interim EVP.
Yes. I didn't mind that really. I kind of, all due respect to my buddy, Billy Gunn, it was underwhelming who his backup was. Mm-hmm. For me, I would have liked to have seen some other AEW originals back him up. You know, I'm trying to think of who would come to mind right now, but you know,
they could have seen the debut of the Motor City Machine Guns.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Well, my notes on this segment are a mess because I felt like it's a bit of a mess.
There's a lot. First of all,
this is where I really honed in on, we've got people theoretically, who's the heel, who's the babyface? We've got crowd that's cheering for the wrong guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're still for rightful reasons, because he's amazing, spellbound by Okada even being there, that they're not yet willing to boo him, obviously. He gets the Lamborghini, they're chanting, you deserve it, right? I mean, to answer the original question, it's been a while since I've been gifted a Lamborghini, guys, but we can talk about that some other time. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is I do like a Christopher Daniels type as an authority figure, sure, but to give him the interim EVP title, which presumably came from Tony Khan, almost cuts his legs out from under him anyway. Why is he interim? Why not just go ahead and empower the guy? Also, where is Tony Khan? And if I missed something at the pay-per-view, is he selling something there? Because I saw him on the Rich Eisen show today, and he looked just fine. In fact, he gave up his neck brace from however long ago when he got the TK driver. He's supposed to be in charge here, right? He can't make the trip. He's got to empower somebody. I guess that's fine. He doesn't want to take another physical assault maybe, but I don't know. It just didn't come across well. And then the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, great. Wonderful, cool, but why? You know, like you said, Jimmy, you love Billy. He's your buddy. You go back a long way, and no disrespect to him, but Why is he there? It's not that he's not a formidable presence, but why? It doesn't make sense. We didn't get any story there. Even somebody new, like you said, George, Motor City Machine Guns or whomever, you can explain that later, right? Mm-hmm. But this one is going to take some real explaining from me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking of which, I think that they're trying to focus to not be the WWE. That I want to say they missed a golden opportunity to just generate the biggest heat and just award Jack Perry the TNT championship. And I get it. This is where the best wrestle. But like, are you so focused on a slogan that you're not worried about like just the creating like such easy heat? Just give him the championship. Oh my God, that's going to do so. That's something.
That would have been nuclear heat.
Yeah.
Especially coming off the heels of what was perceived by many, very many, as a bad move by showing that video. And they're making the best of a bad situation by creating this heel in Jack Perry. Do it. Mm-hmm. Just go all the way with it.
You could already hear the crowd, like, you know, putting it over anyway. Yeah. So it's like, just keep going. Yeah. I mean, I get it. Oh, cool. We're going to see a ladder match. I'm all for a cool ladder match. But, man, I'm all cool for some good old-fashioned nuclear heat as well.
Didn't we just see a ladder match recently?
Yeah, we see a lot of them.
I mean, it's a great point, guys. I was ready for it. I was expecting it. I didn't not to say that I was going to like it, but I wasn't supposed to like it. And that's the point.
Right.
And nobody was ready to like it. They were ready to hate on it, which is what we needed. Now, here's what I don't want to see. Since you went this route, I don't want to see Jack Perry now get involved in that and then go on to Forbidden Door and win this ladder match, because I think that takes away from what it could have been. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This would have been way more heat than however he can figure out how to win that belt title in the ladder match, unless maybe he uses a flamethrower himself. But hey, we've already done that. So
the dude was on fire.
Yeah,
like literal fire, but whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm totally reaching here. You know, there's a reason why WWE does those do not try this at home promos, but mm-hmm. I'm really curious if like there are people, maybe like younger kids that watching it, they're like, ooh, I want to be on fire now because nothing happened to Jack Perry when he was on fire. Like I know it's a bit of a reach and a bit of a stretch, but like you never know what you know, just kind of no selling these kind of things involve, you know.
Mm-hmm. No,
I don't know.
Still trying to figure it out.
I want to ask you if you guys are a big fan of a Casino Gauntlet Battle Royal. It's different. I know we saw it about a month ago, right? Where we had Will Ospreay win that one, who was involved in this one, but where you kind of have a match that can end at any time, but you still have people coming in and coming in and coming in. What do you think, John? Do you like this format?
It's well, new. At least I knew what to expect this time, having seen it, because I remember last time going, I don't, what are the rules? Did anybody explain this? It was all jammed together, not sure. It didn't matter in the end, because then when I saw a certain so-and-so come out, I knew who was going to win. I don't care how many guys you got lined up in the back there. I knew it was going to happen. But I'm all about, you know, a good multi-person, you know, soiree, right? But if I don't know, did they call this a battle royal? I don't remember. Did they call it Gauntlet Battle Royal? I can't remember.
A Casino Gauntlet.
Oh, battle royal insinuates
it. I don't know. Either way, match or something like that. I know it, when the name's convoluted and the audience can't remember what it's called, it loses its cachet. You know what I mean? I didn't mind the match. I get the idea. I get the concept of it, but at least in the body of the match, tell that story where the first two guys are trying to get a quick pin on each other to avoid, you know, the cluster furnum that's going to happen later when a bunch of guys start entering the ring, if you know what I mean. That makes sense to me. That makes sense. Okay. In whatever 3 minutes, there's going to be more people coming to the ring. I want to get this thing over with and done. And I want to go on to the challenge for the championship. Yeah.
Now I said at least this time I knew what the rules were. Actually, I take that back because I'm still not sure. To your point, Jimmy, if you put me in one of those matches, can I get disqualified? I don't know. Because if so,
to cut you off, John, but they did say that there are no disqualifications. There's nothing the referee can do here. He might as well just hang out and wait until there's a pinfall attempt. They even said that. And of course, I had to tweet out as only I can do to generate some heat. is why it makes, what makes that any different from any other match?
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to do it. I'm sorry.
No, thank you. I needed that clarification, and it furthers my point, because if you put me in one of those matches, I'm coming out with 8 chairs and a broomstick and a flamethrower and whatever else, and I'm trying to get in and out of there as quickly as possible to earn my shot at the title.
Yeah, there's no count out, no DQ, so you know.
So we had Jay White, Pac, Mystico, Will Ospreay, Shota Umino, Claudio Castagnoli, Leo Rush, Orange Cassidy, and Richie Cerro. You said, John, as soon as you saw Will Ospreay come out and you knew he was winning, with that said, I was expecting Adam Page to come out, and I thought he would be winning the match. We haven't seen him in a while. But so you just, as soon as you saw Ospreay, you were like, all right, it's this guy.
You know why? Because we just saw this happen. And there's so much behind him right now, and there's so much. I would argue that there's more momentum behind him than anybody in the company right now, and there's more of a push behind him than anybody in the company right now. And I don't mean that in the tried and true, vernacular of the wrestling business. I mean, like, literally, they're putting all the steam behind him, right? I had that feeling, and if it wasn't going to be him, it wasn't going to make sense to me. So actually, when I saw him come out, because it's all unannounced, you don't know who's coming out, I was like, there we go, you know, that was it. And look at what happened. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be. So I don't really, I mean, I understand your perspective, George. It's a cool, different way to look at it with Paige, but that kind of ruined it for me. And it turned out to be true. I didn't want it to be so, but even so, once I saw him, it was like, how are you going to get around this if you take all the steam off of this guy? You know, even in a multi-person match like that, where a million things could happen, but nothing really crazy did happen. So I don't know. It's just another mess in an evening of messes. Hmm. I hate to put it like that, but
I just thought it was interesting making that choice and having him in this match, because now it tells me that Will Ospreay, as much as he said that he wanted that the championship that he had, okay, which one is it? The
international.
I get so confused sometimes. The international championship, and he's going to raise it to new heights. Now he's telling me that it doesn't mean anything to him, that he needs the other title. And I get that. Everybody should strive to want to win the world championship. But at the same time, you're there to elevate the international championship, which he does. Just by holding that title, he's already elevated that championship and making it mean something. Now you're telling me that title is meaningless because it's not good enough for him. He has to go for something else. So
I want to apologize in advance if I yell. What does the international mean? Like, what's the definition of international? Like, if somebody says I'm traveling internationally, like, what does that mean?
It means you're leaving your home country, I believe.
To go where?
To another.
But international, like international. But what does it represent?
All countries. And
so isn't the world championship the same?
So what is the difference of the international and the world championship? This championship better be unified at Forbidden Door. Like, I don't know. For me, like, words like that means such a big deal, especially because I always kind of think back at being a fan as a young kid, and I'm like, man, what would I gravitate to, you know? Like, I can argue Intercontinental, you know, obviously the history of Intercontinental Championship, it was a North American and the South American champion. Now they're the Intercontinental of two different continents, even the European Championship of some aspect, where it's, you know, it's representing all Europe. But doesn't international represent the world? Isn't traveling the world, you're traveling internationally? So, like, why does an international mean more? Or why should the world mean more? There was more people fighting for the international championship when that was going on. Although I think it culminated from the All Atlantic Championship, right? Was that what it was called when it first came out?
So,
like, something like that.
I don't know. Like, I'm hoping this is a champion. I'm hoping they unify it. I don't know. I'm excited for the match. Obviously, a lot of people thought that this was going to happen at All In at Wembley, but now we're seeing it in at Forbidden Door. I'm digging it. I just hope that, you know, they kind of clarify what, you know, international and the world is.
Well, the universal must have really bothered you then, huh?
Oh my God! Don't even get me started.
It just scares me that with him facing Swerve, oh boy, are they going to do it? Are they going to pull the trigger on Will? And what does that mean for someone like Swerve, who just won the championship? You know, it's just.
Now you're in my notes. That's exactly what I was thinking, man. And the word I was going to say is makes me scared, makes me concerned about is Swerve's reign a short one, which it shouldn't be, but it.
No.
Yeah. I don't know.
especially with All In happening, do you kind of go into All In with Ospreay as champion, or do you find some kind of, you know, swerve, I guess you could say, for him to not win the championship? And I mean, then what ends up happening in All In? Personally, I kept saying that I think All In this year is a little too soon for Ospreay to be a world champion. I think I would have saved it for next year. I just don't like the thought of just some new guy that's been traveling all over the world comes into AEW and just, you know, runs supreme when you have a roster full of other kind of great talent that just take a back seat to that. I think what Max Caster said not too long ago in an interview said, like, I don't want anybody to come in because they're taking away my TV time. He needs to talk to Chris Jericho, if anything. But yeah, a lot of thoughts. You know, I enjoyed this episode of Dynamite. Logically, maybe it had a couple plot holes, whatnot. But what were your final thoughts, John, of tonight's overall Dynamite?
Well, one thing that we didn't touch on, I wanted to throw in there because it needs to be said, is like we didn't get a single mention, I don't think, of MJF and his return until halfway through the show. And also, we talk all the time about AEW capitalizing on the momentum from what are almost always great pay-per-views. That guy, your biggest star, came back in full Triple H-esque regalia and a huge return, and he's not here. So I wonder how many people turned it off right then and there when they finally did get that promo package and realized it wasn't going to be there. But I think overall, I mean, I had a good time. I usually do, especially when I know I'm going to be on this show with you guys or whomever else I get to join in with. So it makes me pay, you know, closer attention and take some notes. But it feeds into the long-term concerns I've always had about AEW. And I do root for them. I know how much they mean to this business. I know how important it is for the talent and so many other people involved. So when I come across as negative here in stuff I write on Wrestling Inc. or online, it's strictly out of concern that they're not learning and they're not growing in terms of learning from mistakes and listening to anybody, as Jimmy said earlier. There's great stuff. There's great talent. There's a lot to look forward to, especially in terms of the pay-per-views, but it's the stuff in the middle, and it's how you capitalize on that momentum that they just don't seem to understand how to do.
I think that stems from the top, and it's somebody who's not listening to voices that he could really, really tap into, some great minds back there that now have he's lost, like a guy like Arn Anderson, who is not resigning. Mark Henry is not there anymore. You got a guy like Bubba, Bully Ray, who's offering to go there for free to help them right the ship. And nobody is taking advantage of this. I just don't understand that one bit. And people say, well, you know, he's just going to give him the WWE way. No, he's going to give them a logical, reasonable way to tell stories and present their product on television because he's that damn good at it. And, you know, and there are a lot of minds out there that they could tap into, but for some reason, they just don't listen. They just focus on catering to that niche audience who buys into everything they do. There's nothing they can do wrong. It's like, you know, when you get to the back, a tap on the back. Yeah, good job. No critique. No, what could you do better? Anything like that. And that's terrible. Like you said, John, I root for them. I want them to do. I have friends there that I want to see flourish and grow and make that company mean something. You know, they've done a good job for the first little while, but they've fallen off the train or off the tracks. They need to get back on track and just forget all the white noise around them. Concentrate on doing and focusing what they have is a good roster of talent and telling some great stories and put some thought behind it, as opposed to throwing a dartboard up there and throwing darts at it and say, okay, so-and-so is in this segment against so-and-so, you know, just put some thought behind it first.
You know, who was a good person to learn from, Jimmy? Les Thatcher.
Oh, so my goodness.
I want to give you a chance to put yourself over as we wrap this up.
Yes. This week on the Reffing It Up podcast, Les Thatcher was our guest with me and myself and Brian Hebner, Baby Heb, and RJ. And my goodness, that guy is still sharp as a tack. He's smart. He's witty. He's really, really, he had me in stitches for at least half of that interview. Anyways, what a great, he's a legend too. He's trained so many talents in this business, and it's, you know, not the cheap plug. I'm telling you, you got to listen to this one. He's great. And also you can find me here with you guys whenever we can on Wednesdays. And, you know, Mondays is usually Triple J, but hey, that rotates too as well. So I love doing all this stuff. I'm a big fan of it. And I love doing my Ref and Rants every Monday through Friday on all my social media platforms where I like to make little critiques, and I'm not doing it to tear down. It's just my opinion on things that I think could help elevate. And if it, you agree with it, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. It's my opinion.
Les Thatcher, the true star, or the real star of True Life. I'm a pro wrestler on MTV. Shout out to Rapid Delivery, Rory Fox. What about you, John? How can people find you, and if you want to put yourself over?
You can find me at John Jordan, no H in that John, on the Twitter or the X or whatever you call it these days. And check me out at Wrestling Inc., covering WWE, NXT, AEW, recapping podcast news and news all over the place throughout the week. And apparently playing with toys anytime I show up on this podcast. Or action figures. I forget. You're not supposed to call them toys. Action figures. Look, and in a show of solidarity, holding hands. And we're happy.
I want to give one final shout out to everybody in the chat, everybody watching, Mike Martin, Goodfellas, Nelly Belly, Sony Sitar, you know, all our weekly fans. We all appreciate you. You have no idea how much we do. Let us know in the comments, like, comment, subscribe to Wrestling Inc. I'm George Hermosa. You can follow me at G Hermosa, and you can watch me on Wrestling Inc. every single week and here on Dynamite. We'll see you next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.